Thank you, Ian. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to address this important CEDA event. Well, the ASC has had the job of regulating water since 2004, amongst many of the other sectors that were mentioned earlier. Now, most of my career was spent in energy, so I'm starting to regularly observe many of the same challenges and reform issues that we faced in electricity and gas a decade and a half or two decades ago. Now, save for privatisation of the industry, which the Victorian Government has unequivocally said and indeed legislated will stay in public ownership, many of the other aspects of energy reform, such as the structural separation, creation of markets, regulation of natural monopoly networks, they do provide valuable touchstones for how sustainable and reliable water services can be provided to the community. Now, I think a lot of us would agree that water does present in many ways more challenging public policy environment to work within than energy, although having said that, the recent carbon price issue, I think, might be flipping it back the other way. But the timeframes in any event in water are probably longer, but they shouldn't diminish our resolve to push forward. And as we've already heard, the droughts and all the other environmental issues and the public's strong emotional connection to water are making it problematic in terms of trading off speed of reform and the adjustment issues around first best principles. And I think most of us pretty much agree what those first best principles are. I think we're all in agreement that water prices should recover the efficient cost of supply, and certainly long-term and where appropriate, the short-term impact of demand. And this will provide the appropriate incentive for the sustainable and sensible water use by allowing consumers to balance the relative costs and benefits of consuming water. Now, the Productivity Commission recently highlighted the serious economic consequences of demand restrictions. Now, addressing this in Victoria means that the industry here alone faces something like $14 billion forecast capex over the next 5 years, or the near doubling of the rate base over the same period. And for Melbourne, this means or we'll see average prices increase from a bill of around $500 per annum to about $1,000 per annum in real terms. So, to ensure that these costs and then as they are turned into prices are indeed efficient brings us back to considering the fundamentals, and as we've already heard, that includes assessing the potential for introducing competition into those segments where contestability is considered viable, and that is customer choice on one hand and competing suppliers on the other. And that obviously involves creating markets and the property rights that can underpin the trading of the commodity, as well as integrated networks that allow the transmission and trading of water across different systems and water supplies. And finally, it means separating out the natural monopoly networks and subjecting them to independent regulation. Now, a lot of that, okay, goes with the design of institutional and governance arrangements, and I won't belabor that. And also just noting that obviously there's no current way of allowing potential new entrants in there. But moving forward, what's our role in all of this? Noting that the government's reform plan comprehends a far wider set of initiatives, and I think the Minister will be talking a lot about that later. But following the Victorian Competition Efficiency Commission's inquiry into the reform of the Melbourne metropolitan retail water sector, the government has confirmed the ESC will undertake the second metropolitan price review commencing in November this year, and that will establish price paths and service standards for the next 4 years. The pricing principles and treatment of various miscellaneous charges will also apply to metro businesses. The hybrid form of price control and mechanisms to deal with uncertainty that were utilised in the rural review will also be considered for the metro. The government are also going to ask us to conduct a formal inquiry into the development of a statewide access regime, including developing an access pricing methodology. And they'll amend the WIRO, the Water Industry Regulatory Order, to enable us to develop a ring fencing methodology. As well, we'll also be working with department and stakeholders to develop guidelines that apply to potential sewer mining projects. So, bearing in mind the direction and likely outcomes of many of these reforms, it's worth briefly reflecting on our views on the implications for pricing or tariffs and financing. And in this regard, we're pretty much aligned with what Dr. Keating mentioned earlier. Well, the structure in water prices is generally in the form of the two-part tariff, that's the fixed and variable charge, in Melbourne, the variable charge is made up of three parts, or this inclining block tariff. Now, it's widely accepted that variable charges should be set at the marginal cost, and as we've heard already this morning, there's this little bit of debate around whether it's long-run marginal or short-run marginal. I might just stop there for the moment, just reflect how this happens in energy. The question of the running of the diesel plant, which might be for short and long, how do we reflect that in prices? Well, in energy, that's easily resolved because you have a peak gas plant. The price of that is not reflected through to end users. It's actually reflected in the portfolio, well, initially the spot price and the portfolio that's held by the wholesaler, so that on average it's brought through as a long-run marginal cost supply. But that's how that's resolved in the energy market, and I'm sure that a similar thing ultimately would be resolvable in a similar water. But for the end consumer, I think our view would be that long-run marginal costing is more stable over time and will facilitate long-term decisions over future water consumption, be it types of garden households to have, the gardens they decide to have, or whether they're going to buy a rainwater tank or whatever, recycled water and other sources. Short-run marginal cost pricing, look, is probably useful when water storages are declining, but you know it's all a bit late when they're empty. So again, I think there's more scope to build that sort of pricing at the wholesale level rather than at the retail level. I mean, in retail energy, you don't see the volatile pricing. The consumer does want to see an average price, and it's the retailers who are integrating that risk of the portfolio and of passing it through to the end consumer. So sending what I think we've called in the past punitive prices, where you've got the third block at $3, $4, $5, I mean that is way in excess of any sort of long run marginal cost, and way beyond any sort of value I think you'd put on the externalities. Anyway, so after we've invested in Melbourne and it surrounds $10 billion on water supplies, I think it can be assumed that water supply shortages will be less frequent and less severe. Our current inclining block tariff attempts to restrict demand during those times of shortage. However, with less need for this style of pricing in the future, it's more likely the prices for water will move towards long-run marginal cost and therefore a single variable tariff. Current estimates are around $1 a kilolitre, and as Dr. Keating mentioned, the desal brings it up to around $2, and so I guess that's the sort of price that we'd be expecting. On the financing side, a key feature is that once prices for prescribed services set, the regulator doesn't get in again and adjust them, and that enables efficiencies to be achieved through the period and then eventually passed through the consumers. Also, the regulatory regime gives the certainty to the investors in terms of return, and Dr. Keating mentioned that as well. In the more mature utility sectors, you're seeing an increasing debate over traditional company-specific cost of service, which we call building blocks, as against determining revenues towards productivity indexing. In the long term, I think that such a trend will also emerge in the water sector as the regulatory frameworks mature. We've talked a lot about the need for private investment, and again, I think there's a lot of scope to at least have private investment in the functional input stage of water. Through our regulatory work, observed that a lot of businesses need to focus on improving asset management, capital budgeting, and there is this issue around delivering major projects. Again, greater public sector involvement and greater diversity of suppliers and supply options, I think, would be a benefit overall to the water industry. So, looking forward, the challenge is significant, and the ESC is Victoria's independent regulator. Well, we look forward to working with the government and all stakeholders and trying to deliver that reliable and sustainable water supply. Thank you.